Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Yes, and a very good evening to you. It's John Dixon here with another edition of the Astronomy Show, where we bring you the latest news and discoveries from all corners of the universe here. Right. 103.2 Dublin City FM. I'm John Dixon, of course. Ben, unfortunately, is not here this evening. He's on a mission. And you can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie or as a podcast or on astronomy.ie. And, of course, a special welcome to those of you joining us on astronomy.fm across the Atlantic Ocean, which is great to have you along as well. And, of course, we welcome any queries, comments or questions that you may have, of course, of an astronomical nature. You can email at astronomy@dublincityfm.ie or the two ways to get at us as well, text or WhatsApp on 0871791032, and standard text rates apply. Now, let's just have a quick look to see what's going on around the skies just at the moment. And we have at last the space station, the International Space Station, back in our evening skies. Came in on May the 13th, the day being the 16th, and it'll be with us in our evening skies until May the 26th. I'll go through with the times of that just in a moment, but before we do, let's see where the planets are. Unfortunately, Mercury is hidden deep in the glow of sunrise. Mercury is the one to watch for at the moment. Its magnitude -4.2, and it's very close to the feet of Gemini at the moment, and it's a brilliant, when I say brilliant, it is brilliant, it's an evening star, and it's in the west from twilight through to late evening. And this month it shines about as high as in the dusk as it will ever get, so it doesn't set until a good 2.5 hours after dark, so you've a good chance to get to see that. And if you're looking through a telescope, Venus is a dazzling little gibbous globe. And even though it's only about 60% sunlit at the moment and it's 18 arc seconds in diameter, it's enlarging a little more every day while waning in phase. So this is why we get to see a big bright object in the sky. It's really the first thing that lights up our sky as well over in the west. And it'll be 50% lit in late May. So 60-ish percent at the moment sunlit. And at the end of the month, it'll become a bigger, dramatically thin than crescent, dropping lower from mid-June through mid-July. Mars, still nice to see. It's crossing Gemini this week. It's slimmering weekly for about 2 fist lengths at arm's length. So that's the way to catch that. Up to the upper left of Venus. Now, as I say, you won't miss Venus. And much closer as a guideline, you have to the upper right are Pollux and Castor in Gemini. And Mars, unfortunately, has faded to a magnitude +1.4 between Pollux and Castor in brightness. And Mars is the little orangey-coloured one. Pollux is a paler yellow-orange, and Castor is white. So if you're looking through a telescope, they'll double in the colours. So you can watch their configuration as they change daily. And they have been quite good over the last couple of evenings. We've got a good clear couple of nights, and brilliant to see as well. And Jupiter hides very low in the sunrise at the moment, and it'll be soon on its way up for its 2023-24 apparition. Saturn, on the other side, is shining at +1 at the moment. It's low in the southeast before and during early dawn. Uranus is in conjunction behind the sun, so you won't get to see that. And Neptune is out of sight in the glow of dawn as well. So that is really just two to see, Venus and Mars at the moment. And Venus, well worth a look if you're like me and you're up late at night or raiding the fridge at 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that. It's good as well. So we were lucky enough today, starting just after midnight this morning, we had a 6-minute pass of the International Space Station over in Dublin here. It came back around at just coming up short of 10 to 1 a.m., just for 2 minutes that time. It's quite low in the sky. And if you want to see it again tonight, it's 11:23 p.m. It's quite low again, 10 degrees above west-southwest. To get that time again, 11:23 p.m., just get out a few minutes just earlier before it comes around, because it doesn't wait, unfortunately. Now, sunrise. This morning was at 5:24 a.m. and will set at just 19 minutes past 9 this evening. And the moon, on the other hand, it rose this morning at 4:22 and it's set at 17:31, which is just after 5:30. We'll just have another look for tomorrow morning. Only a few minutes in it, really, so just if you're interested in that type of thing as well. Now, I caught this one during the week. It was just named Boom, and astronomers have just watched the largest explosion in space, and it raged for 3 years. So 3 years ago, they started the data, and up to this week, it was still raging. So the astronomers have witnessed the largest explosion in space. It has a label. It's called AT2021, and it was observed to be 10 times brighter than any known supernova, and the explosions that occur all the massive stars that die. And whereas supernova explosions only last normally a few months, this explosive event has been raging for at least 3 years. Now, the weirdest thing about this is a huge explosion for 3 years. You can't hear anything in space, so you just see a flash of light. So it's remarkably bright. It's huge in the scale and power. And they came across it by chance, and it was flagged by the search algorithm, and they were searching for a particular type of supernova. They just came across it by accident, and they've been watching it ever since. It's still going 3 years later, which is the brightest flash ever observed in the universe. And they've it's not the brightest of all time now, which is known as BOAT, which is the brightest of all time. I love the way they do this. I think it's brilliant. So remember that name, AT2021LWX. So pretty bright, has been going for 3 years. So if we hear any more information about that, by all means, just give us a shout. 087-179-1032 is the text line if you want to keep in contact. And if you can, please let us know where you're listening from. It could be just around the corner. It could be over in Spain. It could be France. It could be Italy. It could be New Zealand. It could be anywhere. We get messages from everywhere, and we love to hear from people listening our way, although there could be a little bit of a time difference in between. Now, the SpaceX AX2, the private astronauts' mission, is go for May the 21st launch. This is the second ever private astronaut mission to the International Space Station, and it remains on track to lift off this weekend, May of the 21st. So looking forward to that one as well. All going well. And if we go out a little bit further, and we've been ever watching Saturn's rings. Now, just to let you a little idea of what they are, they're sort of ice that's been crashing amongst itself for God knows how long at this stage, but they reckon they're only 400 million years old at this stage, so they're quite young in the universe and time thing as well. So Saturn rings, as they say, are surprisingly youthful, much younger than the gas giant itself. And strangely enough, roughly 10 meters deep. Now, we are so many million miles away from from Saturn. And the rings, although they stretch out for hundreds of thousands of kilometers from the surface of Saturn, they're roughly 10 meters deep, an average of 10 meters, which is about 30 feet deep, and it's just absolutely mind-boggling. I think the angle of Saturn is not good for us at the moment, because it's sort of end-on, which is a shame, because it only gets to about 20, 22 degrees. Now, let's go back to Juno. Now, Juno, unfortunately, has been out of the limelight for a while, and it entered the orbit of Jupiter on July the 4th in 2016, remember this as well, and is the first explorer to peer below the planet's dense clouds, and it's up there to answer the questions of the gas giant itself, and of course the origins of the solar system. Now, in an extended mission phase, they've changed the orbits slightly. It's heading for Io just at the moment. So let's go back in time to August the 5th, 2011, when it embarked on a five-year journey to Jupiter. And that's our solar system's largest planet and responsible for keeping all the meteorites away from us, or most of them anyway. And arrived on Jupiter July the 4th, 2016. After 5 years, 1.740 million mile journey, and settled into a 53-day polar orbit, just stretching from Jupiter's cloud tops to the outer reaches of the Jovian magnetosphere. So, not an awful lot coming back, but eventually it's to do 72 elliptical orbits before it crashes into the surface of Jupiter itself. But before it does, it's creeping up on Io at the moment, just to see if it can get some more information about that particular moon of Jupiter, which is marvellous to see as well. It's so far out as well. Now, Hubble has been in the news quite a lot recently, starting a number of years ago, whether they'll decommission it. They decided not to. They decided to recommission it. They even went up, fixed a few bits and pieces, gave it a hug. Now, whether they'll go out again, I don't know, but a new private plan to rescue the Hubble Space Telescope may also target space junk as well. So what's involved in this, there is a private consortium, and they want to help extend the Hubble Space Telescope's lifetime while cleaning up orbit debris in its neighbourhood as well. It's a pretty good idea. So we have space startups, remember these names, Momentus and Astroscale. They sent a proposal to NASA after the agency issued a request for information just last December in 2022. And it was regarding a non-exclusive SpaceX study announced in September. So they were looking for a little bit of information just to guide them a little bit as to how they might help to rescue the Hubble Space Telescope and get rid of space junk as well, which is a huge, huge problem because there are hundreds of thousands of bits and pieces up there at the moment. So Astroscale was founded in 2013. And it launched the Space Debris Demonstration Mission in March 2021, and this mission aimed to test junk capture technology using simulated pieces of debris, and the test was halted in May 2022 due to the anomalous spacecraft conditions. So there were a couple of problems, but they plan another effort in 2024. Momentus, on the other side, it started its operations in 2017, has launched several demonstration flights of a space tug called Vigoread aboard the SpaceX rideshare missions. And with a bit of luck, there's about $40 million of cash on hand between the two companies at the moment. And just to give you an idea what's being spent, Momentus, however, is spending roughly $8 million a month. And that's remarkable as to what exactly you get back for your money on that one. So, of course, we knew that Hubble flew into space on April in 1990. Remember that so well. That's so many years ago. My goodness, 1920. So it hovers 540 kilometres above the Earth as of late 2022. It's now 38 miles, 60 kilometres lower than its initial orbit. And because of microgravity that the Earth still produces, Hubble continues to fall gradually thanks to the drag induced by Earth's atmosphere, which is whisker thin, but not non-existent. And that's why you get this tiny grab. So every now and again, they've got to boost and just hit the jets to push it back up again, make sure the altitude is a little bit higher. So they reckon Hubble has a 50% probability of falling back to our planet in 2037. And we're going to see if we can rescue that as well, which would be a great thing to do. Now, Ben and I mentioned last week about the supercharged auroras. And this is due to a rare backward sunspot that, as I say, could create and has created some supercharged auroras last week and this week. And it's believed that only 3% of all sunspots display reverse polarity, as this particular one does as well. Lovely pictures of northern Sweden in the sky in Abisko from a month or so ago, and still raging up there as well as we come into solar maximum over the next couple of years as well. So huge explosions which take about two to three days to get here and cause technology blackouts, which is not good, but they're fantastic to see as they arrive, as the auroras in the North Pole and the South Pole. You can even see them down as low here in Ireland as well, down to, nearly to the south of Ireland, which is rather good to see. Now, I picked this one up last week, actually. It's a few days ago. A little bit of research has been going into it. There was a space rock, which may be part of the ongoing Eta Equared meteor shower at the moment, still visible up to the 19th. You know, there's a couple of few little stragglers still around. It did peak a week or two ago, and there was one piece that got through the atmosphere. It decided it was going to land through somebody's ceiling, or somebody's roof, and it was in somebody's bedroom, which I believe, and it's it's quite remarkable to see it, actually. I don't know how hot it was when they saw it, but they heard this crash. No one was injured when the metallic-looking rock fell, and the family was at home. And it ricocheted as it hit the floor back up to the ceiling, where it punctured another hole. And thanks to the high speed at which it must have impacted, then bounced back down to the floor where it was discovered. That must be remarkable to see. I wonder what I'd tell anybody. I don't know who owns these things when they land, so... at first, they said that someone might have thrown a rock at their home, but they've done their research, and this piece of rock, which is a remarkable piece, is probably the same size as a large potato, and got a few chunks and nodules taken out from hitting the roof and going through the roof of somebody's house in New Jersey in the US, and they're just checking up on that as well. And seemingly, as the space rock measures four inches by 6 inches, as I said, just a big... potato, somewhat oval in shape as it came through the atmosphere, and just peaked before dawn over there, which was must have been remarkable to see if anybody saw it screaming through the evening and morning skies. You often wonder when you do see these things, and they often come through the sky. And I would see them quite often because Ben and I would, when we get out of the car, we go outside, we look up. We don't look down, and sometimes we get to see the International Space Station just totally out of the blue, or we get to see some flares, satellite flares, all these type of things, and the odd meteor. And I caught two about 2 months ago, absolutely huge. One would have thought that they were only in the garden next door, but they are 60 kilometres up, and they more than likely just burn up into the atmosphere. And we are listening to The Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. John Dixon here until 8:30-ish. I'd like to have your company. To say the text line 087-179-1032. If you'd like to say hi to anyone, just pass on a message, and you at some stage let us know where you are listening from, because we like to hear that as well. And we, of course, we know that we're broadcast across on astronomy.fm three times a day, so that's quite good for anybody over that side of the Atlantic. Now, last week we had the cosmonauts. They were wrapping up a five-hour International Space Station spacewalk. We had Russian cosmonauts Dmitry Petelin and Sergei Propylov concluded their five-hour spacewalk at the International Space Station last Friday. And they spent their day readying their spacesuits in the station's Poisk airlock, where they attached batteries, checked for leaks, and tested the suits and communication system, as it takes probably about 2 hours to get into these suits. And the pair had completed two previous spacewalks since April, installing a radiator and transferring an airlock from the Rosvet module to the NOCA science module as well. So lots of science experiments to do that we won't know about. They spent 5 hours and 40 minutes in the spacewalk, and they are the new evolution of spacesuits that were intended for the scrapped Soviet moon program that have been upgraded a little bit over the decades, eventually for use on the International Space Station due to, I suppose, space saving space and all that sort of stuff. So That was great. And they also transferred the airlock between the ISS modules as well. So quite a lot of stuff is done within the 5 hours that they're in the spacewalk. And it's remarkable to think that they can last in the spacesuits for that long. Now, JUICE. Over 3 weeks since the initiation of the deployment process for JUICE's radar for the icy moon's exploration antenna, the 16-metre long boom has finally been liberated from its mounting bracket. And last week they were trying to find a way of getting this because something jammed and they couldn't figure out exactly what it was. And the first attempt at stretching out the compacted antenna, it didn't work. Then they did it again, and the attempt to dislodge the pin which was holding this, and they were oscillating the JUICE spacecraft using its thrusters, and then warmed JUICE with sunlight just to expand a little bit. So day after day passed, and there was an indication of movement in the RIME antenna, but it didn't fully unfurl. So May the 12th, it was finally coaxed into action when the flight control team triggered a mechanical device known as a non-explosive actuator, just in case you're interested, an NEA, and it's situated in the jammed bracket, and this produced a jolt that shifted the pin by a few millimetres. So it just shows you that things can be done from Earth, not sending anybody up into space to the JUICE program, which allowed the antenna to extend. Unfortunately, we wouldn't have been able to go up. But everything seems to be running okay. And the ESA's Jupiter Icy Moons Explorer, that's where JUICE comes from, when it reaches Jupiter, it will utilize RIME to examine the surface and subsurface of Jupiter's icy moon down to a depth of 9 kilometers. And RIME, R-I-M-E, is one of the 10 instruments on board. And JUICE poised to explore the genesis of habitable worlds where gas giants and the formation of our solar system could be learned a little bit more, which is great. I just mentioned earlier on about NASA's Juno mission closing in on Io just at the moment. And it's going to fly past Jupiter's volcanic moon later on today, May the 16th. And then on to the gas giant itself soon after. So, just to explain what's going on, the flyby of the Jovian moon will be the closest to date at an altitude of 22,000 miles, just over. And it's in the third year of its extended mission to investigate the interior of Jupiter. And the solar-powered spacecraft will also explore the ring system, where some of the gas giant's inner moons reside as well. So at this stage, out of the 70, I think it's 72 it's going to do, Juno has performed 50 flybys of Jupiter. Again, they've been very, very quiet about this, letting it out into the media, and they've been collecting data during close encounters, of which 3 of the 4 Galilean moons, Europa, Ganymede, and fiery Io, were included as well. So Io, of course, is the most volcanic celestial object that we know in our solar system, so that's where the interest comes from that as well. So eventually it will crash into the surface of Jupiter, and the clouds, they reckon, 22,000 miles deep, it'll probably only get about a third of the way before it sort of gets melted in radiation and crushed with the weight of the clouds. And the JUICE, funny enough, I picked this one up earlier on as well, and it's the JUICE Jupiter probe was spotted 1 million miles from Earth on a little video. They've been following it as it zooms away from Earth towards the solar system. And it was launched on April the 14th, kicking off its 8-year journey to the Jupiter system. Once it gets there, it's going to investigate the Jovian atmosphere and its physics and all its moons as well. So something really to look forward to, and that stuff comes back as well. So that's brilliant. Now, our James Webb telescope, of course, it was launched not so long ago either, and it's studying just at the moment a comet 238P/READ, which lurks in the main asteroid belt, and the study of this could help reveal the source of Earth's water, which is a vital ingredient for life on our planet, as we know. And I've been doing a bit of research on when water was on the surface of Mars, so they reckon between 3.8 and 4 billion years ago, so not yesterday or the day before. So the James Webb telescope has spotted water around the rare comet located in the main asteroid belt between Jupiter and Mars, and the observation represents another scientific breakthrough for the James Webb telescope, representing the first time that gas, in this case water vapor, has been detected around a comet and the main asteroid. And this is important as it shows the water in the early solar system that could have been preserved as ice in the main asteroid belt. And there was always the wonder of how Earth got its water. So they blame comets, they blame asteroids, they blame just water itself in ice. And we've seen objects in the past with the characteristics of comets, but only with the precise spectral data from the James Webb Space Telescope we can say yes, it's definitely water ice that's creating this particular effect. And if you want to go on to Google that, just put in James Webb Telescope discovers water around a mysterious comet, and you can read all about that as well. Now, most of us at this stage would be familiar with all the Messier objects. These are all the M1s, M2s, up to 110. And that's what Charles Messier logged, all the astronomical objects catalogued by the French astronomer Charles Messier back in 1771. And his preliminary version that appeared in 1774. And they're called his Catalogue des Nébuleuses et des Amas d'Étoiles, which is the catalogue of nebula and star clusters. The strange thing about this as well, he wasn't actually looking for Messier objects, if you want. He was only interested in finding comets, so he created a list of those non-comet objects that frustrated his hunt for them, just to get them out of the way. So lucky for us, we can now reverse the catalogue, and we can spot all these Messier objects from 1 up to 110. There's all sorts of clusters and things like that as well. So the first version, as its catalogue said earlier on, it contained 45 objects which were not numbered. But he pointed out in the sky where they were, and 18 of the objects were discovered by Messier himself, and the rest being previously observed by other astronomers. So by 1780... the catalogue had increased to 70 objects, and the final version of the catalogue containing 103 objects was published in 1781. It took a few more years to get that, when the addition of the Crab Nebula, the Great Spiral Andromeda Galaxy, which is M31, in case you want to know that, further inclusions followed, and the first edition came from Nicolas Camille Flammarion in 1921, which is a few years later than the 1700s, who added Messier 104. And what else did we get in there? Yep, it was hard to call them things, like Andromeda and things like that. So they just kept going with the M105, 107, 108, 109, 110. So imagine getting the first edition of the 1774, which covered the 45 objects. Absolutely fantastic as well. And just before we disappear, SpaceX launched its 56 Starlinks early on Sunday. All went well there. That was May the 14th, and it was 103 over in the US, so it would have been 105 or 6, about just coming up to 5 past 6 our time over here. And they were all internet communication satellites into low Earth orbit, adding to more and more and more bits and pieces up in the skies. So there we go. And that is it for me for this evening. Thank you indeed for your company. And that email address for comments or questions is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks as ever to James Sweeney, and he makes it available as a podcast, and indeed to Conor Lennon for putting it up on astronomy.ie. So that's all from me, John Dixon, for this particular edition of the Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Next, Hello China, 9 o'clock with Threads with Bren Lynott. At 11 p.m. we have Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood, with worth a listen with his world music. Midnight we have After Hours with Dave Barry with his jazz, blues and soul until 2 a.m. then it cracks off again in the morning with Helen for the traffic program from 7. So there we go. Please join myself and Ben next week And we'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thanks indeed for listening. Great to have you along. Say goodnight, John. Of course, goodnight, John. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.